Let God arise. Let God arise. Let God arise. What a thing to sing. What an idea to proclaim. What a prayer to pray. Let God arise. If I were to ask you to join me over the next several weeks in praying this prayer and singing this song and letting this be the thing that we think about, what am I asking you to join me in? And I do ask you to join me in this. Let God arise. Over the next several weeks, we are going to be thinking about this, this phrase, this idea, this plea, this prayer to let God arise. So what am I asking? This comes from Numbers chapter 10 and verse 35, picked up again in Psalm 68. It was a cry that Israel would make when they would lift up the Ark of the Covenant, God's resting place, His presence on earth, as they would lift it up and carry it before them as they made their way from Sinai to the Promised Land in what would eventually be the resting place in the temple. Israel would cry, "Let God arise." And what they were saying, what they were meaning, was they were begging, they were pleading, they were praying that God would rise up and lead them to where they should be, to lead them in the way they should go, to take them to the promised land. And in Psalm 68, it's a cry repeated, "Shall God arise? Let God arise. His enemies be scattered. And those who hate him shall flee before him. As smoke is driven away, so you will drive them away. As wax melts before a fire, so the wicked perish before God. But righteous, the righteous shall be glad. They shall exult before God and be jubilant with joy." Psalm 68 is a thanksgiving prayer. As they recalled God rising up before Israel and leading them to the promised land from Sinai to Jerusalem. All the battles won, all the victories claimed, all the times God made a way for His people to make it, to go where they needed to go and to be who they needed to be. Let God arise. That is our prayer. We want God to rise up in our own lives, leading us, showing us the way, leading us where we need to be. We need God to rise up in our lives, in our individual lives, as well as in the life of the congregation here at Watermill. Let God arise takes on a particular meaning in light of the conversation that we've been having over the past month or so, in thinking about sharing our good news, sharing our faith with the community that we live in, with the people we interact with on a daily basis, friends, colleagues, co-workers, people we go to school with, our own family members. In light of the call to share our good news, we want God to rise up. We want Him to rise up in my own life, showing me the people I need to share my faith with, my good news with. We want Him to rise up in this broken world we live in, to make His presence known in the life of His people so that we can make a difference. Let God arise. How do we do that? We do that first by understanding that we are not sharing a what. We are sharing a who. Our faith isn't a series of whats, but it is led by a who. Who do you serve? And can you share who you serve with the people in your life? I can share and talk about a lot of whats and a lot of things, but it's the who that I follow. Now, when we talk about serving someone, having a master we serve, that gets a little, I don't really like that language very much. And chances are the people in your life, well, I don't serve anyone. No one is my master. And the thing is, yeah, there's someone is. Everyone serves something, right? We all serve something, something that we try to gain meaning and purpose from, something that we order our life by. Unfortunately, what often is the case is that the people in our lives are serving the wrong things. They're serving things like power, trying to amass as much of it as they can, influence over other people. And eventually they realize it is never enough. It leaves them hollow and empty or chasing a goal that they can never achieve. Or maybe it's the god of money and wealth, and that's who they serve. And you work more and more hours, and you take on new and new responsibilities trying to gain and amass wealth for yourself, and where does that lead? Is it ever really enough? What about us? Can we share who we serve? I love the portrait in Psalm 68 of who we serve. Psalm 68 gives us a lot of guidance. The words of the song that we just sang are taken from the ideas here in Psalm 68. It paints a picture of God as a warrior king, riding out before his people. His chariots and his armies are so vast. And there's this great victory procession that goes before God as he leads his people to where they should go. And so we have this image of a warrior king, but I want you to notice what the psalmist says God actually does. Look at verse 4. Sing to God, sing praises to his name, lift up a song to him who rides through the deserts. His name is Jehovah. Exalt before him the father of the fatherless, protector of widows, is God in his holy habitation. He settles the homeless in a home. He leads out the captives to prosperity. Oh God, when you went out before your people, when you marched through the wilderness, the earth quaked, the heavens poured down rain before God, the one of Sinai, before God, the God of Israel, rain in abundance, oh God, you shed abroad. You restored your inheritance as it languished, and your flock found a dwelling in it. In your goodness, oh God, you provided for the needy. Now skip down to verse 19. Blessed be the Lord, who daily bears us up. God is our salvation. And to God the Lord belongs deliverances from death. Our God is a God who saves. That is our who. That is who we serve. A God who saves. He doesn't keep taking and asking more and leaving us empty. He is a God who saves and delivers us from death. That's a story you can share, isn't it? How many people do you know in your life who need to serve our God who saves? So here's what I want you to do. As we've thought about sharing our good news, I want you to choose a story, an idea, an image of our God who saves. How has the story of who God is and how he saves made a difference to you in your life in a real and practical way? And I want to challenge you to figure out how you can share that story with someone who needs to hear it. Let me show you what I mean. Turn over to Mark chapter 1. I think of a couple of stories that have made a difference to me in my life. Stories that I needed to hear to be reminded about the God that I serve, the one who saves. This is always one of my favorites. In Mark chapter 1, in verse 40, Jesus has not long been on the mission field. He has not long been doing his ministry. And here comes a leper. A leper comes to him, imploring him, kneeling before him, and says, "If you will, you can make me clean." I want you to stop for just a minute and think about what's going on here. This man comes with leprosy. Now we know what leprosy is, essentially. It's skin disease. It was a catch-all word in the ancient world to really refer to any sort of skin disease that you might have. Skin diseases that could cause pain, sometimes that could cause the loss of life, the loss of limbs. And so there was an excruciating pain. And in our world, you know, we get poison ivy, we've got cream to rub on it, we get eczema, we've got cream, we've got steroids that we can take to cure staph infections and all these other sorts of things. But in their world, they had none of that. And if you got a skin disease, chances are it was your life. So there was an excruciating amount of pain involved in a skin disease, but that's not where it ended. If you had a skin disease, not only did you have to deal with the physical limitations and pain it brought, but it also meant you were unclean. Not like you were dirty, but it meant you were unworthy. It meant you were without hope. It meant that you could no longer live in your home, in your community, with your family. You were cast out. You had no value, no worth. You were invisible. And so here comes this man, separated from his relationship, separated from his community, separated from all of his support. And I want you to think about what it might have took for him to find Jesus where he was, knowing how people would see him. Knowing the unclean status that he carried. And he falls at Jesus' feet. And notice the pure faith. He says, not if you can, but if you will. I want you to notice the pain that must have been in that one phrase. He knew Jesus could, but would he? No one else in his life would. No one else in his life would give him any attention or even want to be around him. So not if you can, but if you will. And I don't know if you will. And then notice what Jesus does next. It says, and seeing him, he took pity on him. And I don't really like the word pity. It has a kind of almost a negative connotation. And actually, in the original language, the word would have been indignation or righteous anger. Jesus looks at this man. He sees his condition, both his physical and his emotional or spiritual condition. And he's angry that it has come to this. He is angry that this man has been separated from everyone he knows and loves and has no hope and feels worthless. We know Jesus. We've read the stories about what Jesus can do. We know that Jesus can heal with just a word. We know that Jesus can heal without even being in the same room or the same town as another person. But in this moment, Jesus reaches out and he touches him. He touches him and says, I will be clean. Jesus knows that not only does this man have a physical limitation that needs to be cleared up, but he also has something else. Do you guys remember what it was like the first time you got to shake a hand or receive a hug after so long in isolation? For some of us, isolation's like a party. That's a vacation. But for others, and for really all of us, we need human connection. We need human touch. This man who was in isolation for so long needed more than just his body to be healed. He needed his soul to be healed. And Jesus reaches out and he touches him. And then he says, strictly charges him to tell no one, which is pretty common in Mark. Jesus often shushed everybody. But notice what he says, but go and show yourself to the priests. Make the sacrifices you need to as Moses commanded you as proof. Why did he do that? Because he doesn't only care about his healing, he cares about his re-entry into community, into fellowship, into relationship. Without doing that, he would still be outcast. Without doing that, he would still be disconnected and removed from the people who could give him hope. And so Jesus says, not only are you clean, not only are you receiving this touch, but also I want you to go and make this right so you can re-enter life. Maybe you in your life have felt at times worthless or hopeless, unseen. I can think of a time in my life where I felt that way. Depressed, felt invisible, as though no one wanted me around, as though I had nothing to offer, nothing to give, not only them, but nothing to give God. And I wanted to give up. I just wanted to walk away. And a friend reminded me of this story and reminded me that I serve a God who saves, who sees. He sees the worthless. He sees the broken. He sees the hurting, and he reaches out and he touches and he heals and he saves. Do you know someone in your life who needs to hear that? Do you know someone in your life who you can share that story with? Can you think of times in your own life where you have felt the same way, but because you know you serve a God who saves, you were able to get up and keep moving forward with hope? That's what you share. That's what you offer. Your story of how God has saved you and given you hope. Or maybe we might turn to John chapter 8. We might think of another occasion in which Jesus saved. In John chapter 8, Jesus is walking along in the early morning coming to the temple. And all the people, it says in verse 2, come to him. And he sits down and he begins to teach. And what do we imagine Jesus taught? Maybe everything he's always taught, love and forgiveness. And as he's teaching these people who have gathered around him out in the shadow of the temple, suddenly there is a commotion as religious leaders of the day, scribes and Pharisees, come along bringing a woman. And they cast the woman into the dirt at Jesus' feet. And they say with a loud voice, so that all would know and hear, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. And we all know that Moses commands one such as this to be stoned. Jesus, what do you say? I want you to just sit for a minute and just picture what's going on. There's no man here because they don't care about the people. They let the guy off the hook and they bring the woman along. They don't care about her. They don't see her as a person. They see her as a means to an end. Because John tells us they did this to trap Jesus. They have already judged her. They've already decided her fate. They have already decided her worth. And it's to be cast in the dirt. And you can imagine the crowd. They all know how this is going to turn out. You can almost see in your mind's eye them turning and searching the ground, trying to find stones or pieces of pavement or other debris because they know what's about to happen. And Jesus ignores them. He just turns and starts drawing in the dirt. You feel the tension stretch out in this moment. I want you to imagine this woman. She's there in the dirt. Everyone is staring at her, tears streaking her face, fear, guilt, shame. Her worst moment, her worst decision, drug out in front of everyone, asked to be judged for all time, this one thing. How many of us would love, raise your hand, how many of us would love our worst decision, our worst lapse of judgment, our worst mistake to be plucked out, brought before everyone and said, let's judge this person on this one moment for the rest of their life? Anybody? How many of you have made mistakes? How many of you have had lapses of judgment? I know I have. I make mistakes every day. Carrie can tell you. So here she is in her worst moment, being judged by everyone. So Jesus, finally, he looks up. He looks at the crowd and says, all right, by all means. By all means. If you are here and you've never made a mistake, if you're here and you've led a completely perfect life, if you've never had a lapse of judgment, If you've never had a moment that you just, oh, you did the thing you knew you weren't supposed to do, but you did it anyway, whoever's here that's like that, by all means, throw the first stone. And I wonder in that moment if she was still afraid. Because isn't it human nature to overlook our own mistakes and to think, well, I'm not as bad as, you know, over here. But something about the authority with which Jesus posed that question struck their hearts. And you can almost imagine, right? These soft thuds in the dust as rocks fell from limp fingers. And eventually the crowd disperses, the leaders go away, and it's just Jesus and this woman. And Jesus addresses her for the first time. And he says, "Woman, is no one left to condemn you?" See her in your mind's eye as she looks up and she begins to take in the non-seen around her. As grief and fear is replaced with hope, with bewilderment, with gratefulness. And trembling, she replies, "No, no one." And then Jesus says, "Neither do I condemn you, but go and sin no more. Go and do better. Be better." That's the God we save. That's the God we serve. Do you know someone in your life who's made a mistake? And that mistake has haunted them, has followed them, has cast a pall over them, and they understand who they are, their worth, their value, as a result of that one choice, or maybe continued choices, because this is as good as I am, as good as I ever can be. Has there been moments in your life when you've felt like that? Serve a God who gives a second chance, and a third, and a fourth, and what he asks of us is, do better. Be better. I do not condemn you, but I do not condone what you are doing. I don't condemn you for this one lapse of judgment and mistake, but I ask you to follow me into a new life. Let God arise in your life. Do you know someone who needs to hear about our God who saves? Or maybe we want to share the words of Paul quoting Isaiah in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Death is swallowed up in victory. Death is swallowed up in victory. Death, where is your victory? Where is your sting? The sting of death is in sin, the power of sin, the law. But thanks be to God who gives us victory through Jesus Christ. The psalmist says, our God is a God who saves, the God of salvation who provides deliverance from death. There is no sting left in death because we know, because we serve a God who saves, that it is not the end. Do you know someone in your life who is crushed by loss? And though belief in our God who saves doesn't take immediately away our grief and the pain of losing someone, what it does give us is hope. Hope that this is not the end. Death does not have the final say. God does. We serve a God who saves. So, let God arise. Let God arise in your life, showing you what you need to share, showing you who you need to share it with. Let God arise in your life and take you where you need to be. Let our prayer be together that God will rise up in our own lives and the lives of the congregation here, that he will rise up in the lives of the people that we are sharing our story with. Join me in praying, let God arise. Now there's a word here we haven't talked about yet. It's let. Because God is there, he is willing, he has reached out his hand to touch us, he has asked us a question. But we have to let him. He's not going to do it for us. We have to let Him. And the thing is when we share our good news with others, we need to ask them, to let them know. God is willing to save you. He is willing to be the God who saves and continues giving you second chances, continues giving you worth and value and seeing you, but you have to let Him. And that is all we need to know. We don't have to have doctorates in theology. We don't have to have it all figured out. We don't have to know exactly what it's going to mean moving forward. All we have to know is, do I believe in the God who saves, and am I willing to let Him in? Am I willing to let Him rise up in my life? Put on Christ in baptism and receive the forgiveness of sin. I can figure the rest out. God will show me the way. That's why we have a community of faith that surrounds one another and helps us figure life out together. But all we have to do is let Him. It's our responsibility to let God. I want to encourage you this morning to think of people in your life that you need God to rise up in, that you can share your story, your belief in the God who saves, how He has saved you, what He has done for you in your life. Share the who. Who do you believe in and why? And pray, let God rise up in these moments and in these situations. Or if you are here this morning and you have yet to make that choice, we pray, let God, and figure the rest out as you go. If you believe in our God who saves and you want Him to save you, let Him. Give your life to Him in baptism. Receive the forgiveness of your sins and the gift of the Holy Spirit. And let God arise. We're going to sing now a song. A song that praises God as one who is mighty to save. I pray that He has been working on your heart this morning. Let God arise.